information.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for data center security and collaboration strategy and solutions.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us here on a Wednesday, as we are every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to be following the money as per usual this show and talking with an expert on legislation on Capitol Hill, following it, tracking it, knowing what's real and what's not. And it's Bill Bransford. And Bill wears many hats. He's probably the best known attorney in the Washington area on federal employee matters. And he is also your general counsel, Bill, to the Senior Executives Association.
And so, I do legislative work for SCA, so I'm up on Capitol Hill looking out for the interests of the Career Senior Executive Service.
Right, right. And you also work with these various coalitions of unions and professional groups. Right.
There's quite a few of them, actually, looking out for the interests of federal employees, federal employee benefits, federal employee salaries, legislation, the pay system. All of that, yes.
Well, you know, I've always thought that federal workers, as a rule, they're not joiners. They don't join unions or whatnot. The vast majority do not belong to a union. But considering their input, which in some cases is minimal, they don't pay dues, they don't join associations, they are very well represented in Congress, and they have a lot of staunch friends in Congress, both Republican and Democratic.
That's true. Of course, the Senior Executives Association that I do the legislative work for is not a labor union. We're a professional association of the career executives, but we do work closely with groups like the National Treasury Employees Union, the American Federation of Government Employees, the National Federation for Federal Employees, on a number of issues. We don't always see eye to eye because we're management and they are, the workers that our managers try to supervise. But there are many issues where we're aligned, and when we're aligned, we do try to work together.
Well, I know in the past you have supported them for pay raises, even when it wasn't a direct interest to your members.
That's right. The way the SES law was revised back in 2003, senior executives don't necessarily get a pay raise every year. It's discretionary with their agency, and they can get whatever their agency thinks is appropriate. And the pay cap goes up by reference to the executive schedule, but the issue every year is pay parity. And I know you've written about that a lot, Mike. And so there were a number of times over the last decade when the Bush administration proposed a different salary increase for federal employees than was proposed for the military. And there were very, very, very strong efforts by the unions, management associations, National Active and Retired Federal Employees, a number of groups came together under the leadership of the local area delegation in Congress to fight for pay parity, and SEA was a part of that.
And didn't President Obama propose a larger increase for military this time around? I think he proposed 1.9 for them versus 1.4 for civilians. So
right.
The pay parity issue is still there. You know?
It's still there, but it's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
There isn't the outcry, and there isn't the congressional appetite to fight for pay parity. And so it's just not happening. And if federal employees are lucky, fortunate, the 1.4% will go through. I think there's a pretty good chance that it will. At this stage, but it appears under attack.
And well, you know, I was on promoting this show earlier, and Amy Morris with Tom Timmon, and Amy made a good point. She said, you know, I've known you for years. When we go into situations like this, you're always saying, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. This has happened before. It's not serious. She said, this time I don't sense that from you. And I said, well, you know, hadn't thought about it, but you're right. Normally, at this time of year, midterm election, one party controlling Congress or not, I would be saying, look, all of these boogeymen are out there, as they always are, but don't lose any sleep over it. You know, fasten your seatbelt, but don't get
right.
Scared.
I think you've written a lot about the 5-year high three.
Right, exactly.
You've always talked about it's not going to happen, and quite frankly, next year all bets are off. We don't know. We don't know. It depends on what happens on November 2nd. And if the Republicans get control of the House, they could pass some very interesting anti-federal employee legislation next year.
You know, to be the devil's advocate, I would think it could happen either way, because as we just said, when the Bush administration did not propose pay parity, when they proposed a higher raise to the military than the civilians, the unions in particular led the fight, and they're not doing that this time, or at least certain not with any vigor. And could it be because they all supported President Obama?
Well, I think they're also dealing with the reality of the financial crisis, the fact that the federal employee rhetoric has gained traction because of the public perception that federal employees are a bunch of fat cats doing well in these secure jobs, getting pay raises every year, which, of course, is not true. I want to add right away, that's just, I recognize that's not true. But there's a public perception that's being fueled by, particularly by Republican Party activists right now, and the public is eating it up, and the news media is eating it up, and the problem with at this point in time, given the climate, asking for more money, you're just immediately dismissed as an ingrate. As somebody who's unrealistic, and it goes nowhere. Versus a few years ago. Just a few years ago, when these fights could be fought under the general notion and publicly accepted idea that federal employees were paid less than their private sector counterparts and performed an important public service, and most of them had sacrificed to take their federal jobs. That used to be the public perception. I believe that's closer to the truth than what now is that federal employees are not deserving of.
We've had a number of stories, the Wall Street Journal, Washington Times, USA Today, a couple of times, page one stories saying that very thing, and they've come out of the Cato Institution.
USA Today has done some, I think there was a story back in August that USA Today came out with about how much more the job-to-job comparison federal employees are paid more. But the problem with those stories, and really the problem for the other side also, is that nobody really knows.
Yeah.
The data is apples to oranges everywhere you look. And I looked at a very interesting one of the pieces presented in that USA Today article back in August, which really helping to form public opinion. They talked about nurses and how much more federal nurses make than private sector nurses, and it was significant, maybe $10,000 a year more. And then I looked to my own experiences with what nurses make, being married to an ex nurse. And I know that, for example, when my wife was working as a nurse, if she worked in a hospital, she made a whole lot more money than if she worked in a doctor's office. And then I know the Department of Veterans Affairs pays their nurses under Title 38 around the country based upon a recognition of their local market. They don't pay their nurses more than what the nurses make in the local community, but they pay them about what they make. So if you put that together with all nurses, including those who work in doctor's offices who make less, with nurses who work in hospitals who make more, with nurses who work in operating rooms and make even more than that, how fair is the comparison?
There are nurses and there are nurses.
With most federal nurses work in hospitals are doing serious research. So I no one's gotten into the data to any level of depth to see how valid it is. But most of the studies that have been done over the last three or four decades have all said federal employees are underpaid compared to their private sector counterparts.
Well, another part of that, and you're exactly right, this is apples and oranges, and people sometimes are cherry-picking to get the information that backs up what they want to believe or what they think they believe. But there was yet another study, we're being studied to death here, which said that on average federal workers have been on the job longer than people in the private sector. So there's less turnover, and that. Now, you could say a lot of things about that, but one of the things is with status and seniority comes more money.
Well, not only does it come more money, but more greater expertise. I recall when I first became a federal employee many, many years ago, there was a fellow who worked in our office who had it's just a dream job. He was the world's expert. He worked at the Bureau of Public Debt. This guy was the world's expert on government securities. And not only did he know government securities, but he understood how government securities affected the rest of the national economy. And his job was to sit in his office and answer questions whenever anybody had a question. And he just knew it all. And he knew it all from a 35, 40-year career. And you get people like that who are federal employees who really know all the ins and outs, and they're very valuable, and they're worth the money. And you get up to a pay cap, and GS-15 Step 10, GS-15 Step 5 in some places in the country, they don't get paid more money. So the government's really getting a deal with these seasoned people who've been around, who really know what they're doing.
Right, and with that, as you, the expertise does come a higher salary. You know, the average federal worker has been on the job longer on that particular job than the average private sector
worker. You know, the Bush administration used to, in pushing pay for performance, used to complain about people getting an automatic raise every, you know, on their within grade every year or every couple of years. But the fact of the matter, I mean, the common wisdom is that the longer you're in the job at the same grade level, the better you're going to get at it, the more productive you're going to be. And I think that's true for most people, but it isn't true for everybody. So they'll pick and choose those people where it isn't true that get an automatic raise and say nobody should get it.
Right. And the Carter administration did the same thing. They called it being their raises. They were very sarcastic about it, and they said all you have to do is show up, and you get this 3% raise every 1, 2, or 3 years.
Which is why the Carter administration proposed the old PMRS system, Performance Management Recognition System, for managers. They took them out of the general schedule. They didn't get within grades. And, of course, it didn't work because they didn't fund it.
Right. And also people change their job titles, too. So, there are oftentimes reasons why they do things like this. Well, Bill, we've got a lame duck session coming up. Deal with that first. Lame duck sessions are weird. There is a possibility, if what the media is saying is projecting is correct, there are going to be more lame ducks than maybe we've seen in a long time as a percentage of the Congress. I mean, it could be, you know, people are talking about a revolt for against the Republicans, but it could be Democrats too. We need to take a short break here, and I'll ask you about that when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM. She was doing this.
Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Attention AFGE members, did you know you have free access to all federal government job listings at your fingertips? Through AFGE's partnership with AVIEW Technologies, you can view all available jobs, apply online, and be notified when a position of interest to you becomes available. View your application progress online 24/7. You'll even get information to make you a better job applicant. Simplify your next career move with AVIEW Technologies. Log on today and check out current job openings at avuecentral.com. That's avuecentral.com.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind. But are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in home monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has over 40 years of industry-leading experience. Ackerman monitors your home from its UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Ackerman was recently recognized as the National Dealer of the Year from over 30,000 companies. Get the most qualified professionals monitoring your home for just $18.95 per month. And Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. Federal employees, call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service. Call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting slide.
Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive, best-in-breed solutions. Whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity, we're ready to listen and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to Dell.com/deliver now.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Apps for healthy kids. It's the Agriculture Department's $60,000 challenge to create apps to inspire kids to eat healthy. Get moving. The winner announced today. We'll talk to the person behind that innovative contest, even get details on the apps. And super barcodes. They're called QR codes. Are there government uses? We'll find out this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bill Bransford. He is a very well-known Washington attorney in the federal employee legislative field, and he is also general counsel of the Senior Executives Association. Before the break, Bill, I was asking you about the lame duck session. The lame duck, of course, means these are members of Congress, the House or the Senate, who return to Congress, and they've either been defeated or they're retiring. But in any case, they won't have a dog in the fight much longer. They, from November 2nd or 3rd on, they will be out by end of the 1st of January. And this can be an interesting time for people. People can be real statesmen during a period of lame duckery, or they can be complete demagogues or do a variety of things. And I sense you are not certainly not alarmist. I've known you 25 years, and you're not an alarmist, but you seem to be more nervous this time out than I think I've seen you.
Well, I'm nervous of the unknown. Mm-hmm. It is a tremendous unknown. I was reading one article yesterday that speculated, some people in the know, that speculated as many as 40 House seats could go either way. Mm-hmm. And the speculation is that given the public mood, they're more likely to go Republican. You know, the best case scenario for the Democrats is that they might maintain a majority of some 7 or 8 seats, where now they have like 50. So it's they're clearly going to lose a lot of seats. And, of course, that means that they're going to lose some staff resources and they're going to lose some power and ability to control the legislative agenda. And so if in fact, these 40 seats that are kind of up for grabs, if they break 30-10, for the Republicans, then Republicans are going to clearly be in control of the House, and it's going to be very different, especially with all of the anti-employee federal employee rhetoric that's been out there, and given the paucity of Republican interest right now, there doesn't seem to be very many Republicans who are interested in federal employee issues. Senator Voinovich is certainly one. He's retiring. Congressman Castle from Delaware is already a lame duck. And he was certainly somebody who you could talk to about federal employee issues. So how many of the Democrats that care about these issues are not going to be coming back, being replaced by new Republicans who are riding in on a wave of public sentiment that's being fueled by some of the media against federal employees. It's going to be really tough if that happens. And then in the immediate lame duck session that will follow the election, Congress is ready to break this week. Mm-hmm. I think the Senate's going out today, the House on Friday, and they're going to stay out until after the election, come back the middle of November to deal with the appropriations issue, because I see it, the CR is being worked on right now, continuing resolution to keep the government running, so at least we won't have a shutdown immediately. But then they come back in the middle of November, so if the Republicans take one of the or both houses of Congress, what's the mood going to be to pass appropriations legislation when you have it in November, a House of Representatives that's controlled by the Democrats, but in January will not be? And I would suggest that at that point, what's likely is a CR into the next year, and then it would be the appropriations would be voted on by a Republican Congress, or at least one House, that could have significant impact for federal employees.
Well, specific issues like the pay raise, 1.4%. Proposed by the president for federal workers, 1.9% proposed by the president for the military.
Right. And that's supposed to go into the appropriations legislation to actually make it final, to overrule the president's decision, which would usually, I think, is announced toward, it's like right around Thanksgiving or just after Thanksgiving, I think, is a rather complicated system we have for giving our pay increases each year. But I think if I understand it correctly, the president proposes it, and if Congress doesn't act, it goes into effect. So I'm assuming President Obama will stand by his 1.4% increase. But then if Congress were to come back in January and vote some appropriations legislation, it could potentially freeze federal pay retroactively to January 1st. There's nothing to prevent them
from doing that. And there have been three attempts this year to that.
And they've all failed, but at least one of them was close.
One was close, and I think at least one was on procedural issues. Right. It wasn't so much the okay. What about the other things about a federal hiring freeze? You know, they've tried this in the past. I think Senator Roth of Delaware, the first one I can remember. And the irony of it was they said this is a solid freeze. Boom, and then they exempted defense, and then the Postal Service, and then Health and Human Services. Let me ask you about that when we come back here on WFED 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Everyone knows that GEICO can save you money on car insurance. You'd have to be living on Jupiter not to know that. Want to talk discounts? GEICO's got a list of discounts as long as a gorilla's arm, including good driver discounts, multi-car discounts, and discounts for auto safety features. In short, GEICO's out to save you as much money as humanly possible. Scratch that. As much money as inhumanly possible.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Constant hacking. Every day, thousands of cyber attackers try to access federal networks. With Quest Security Solutions, you can keep the out and your data protected. To learn more about Quest Security Solutions, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
The Ability One program creates jobs for people who are blind or have significant disabilities without cost to taxpaying citizens. People like Ronald at Travis Air Force Base.
My job makes me feel proud. I'm serving my country and also helping others that I work with.
Nearly 70% of people with significant disabilities are without jobs. That number may not surprise you unless you know that these individuals are willing and able to work. Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
Well, you know, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem because they're just sharing your data with everybody. Mm-hmm. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what
right?
they try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account, but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, I'm Neil Asbury, host of The Neil Asbury Show. Please join me and my guests each week as we discuss the importance of international trade, entrepreneurialism, small business ownership, job creation, and the American dream.
The Neil Asbury Show, Saturday mornings at 8 on Federal News Radio. The Neil Asbury Show is sponsored by AIT Worldwide Logistics, Yoakum Shore and Trossaven, and WTS, Withers Worldwide Transportation Systems.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Putting more electric and hybrid vehicles on the road is behind an effort by researchers at the Department of Energy's Oak Ridge National Lab. The hope is they'll encourage the joint research and development of clean energy technologies by the U.S. and China. The U.S.-China Clean Energy Research Center will help accelerate the development and deployment of clean vehicle and clean coal technologies here at home. The lab will contribute to advanced systems integration, vehicle electrification, batteries and energy storage, the combustion of biofuels, and other technologies. Government funding for the Clean Energy Research Center totals $25 million, and that's matched by the grantees. The center aims to have an impact on three of society's grand challenges: climate change, energy security, and environmental sustainability.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
You run the kids to the bus in the morning, run errands in the afternoon, run out for dinner, then run to music lessons. Let's face it, your schedule has your family running wild. It's time for some healthy running. The Marine Corps Marathon invites you to register your 6 to 13-year-old for the Healthy Kids Fun Run on Saturday, October 30th at the Pentagon. It's a one-mile, confidence-building fun run where every participant proudly walks away with a medal. The fun includes a family fitness festival, mascots, entertainment, and more. Visit MarineMarathon.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Bill Bransford. He's a well-known Washington attorney, a lobbyist, and he is also general counsel of the Senior Executives Association. Get into some executive questions in a minute, Bill, but we were talking about, we dealt with the pay raise, what may or may not happen with that in the lame duck session. There's talk about a federal hiring freeze. How realistic is that?
Well, I think a lot of people learned, and they did that. I think the last real strong, firm federal hiring freeze was when Ronald Reagan became president. Mm-hmm. It went on for about 5 or 6 months, and then it was finally gradually relaxed. And I think people learned from that there are problems with the hiring freeze. There are critical unmet public needs, and now in this era of, you know, where we're fighting a war in Afghanistan and winding down in Iraq, and we have all the 9/11 heightened security. We just hear this morning that there's another terrorist attack, that was being planned in Europe. And, you can't just have a hiring freeze. You need federal employees doing these very important things. You had a hiring freeze, a bunch of TSA security, transportation security officers quit. Our airport lines would be enormously long. So you've got to carefully select how you're going to do it. And even the Pledge to America doesn't talk about a hiring freeze. It talks about replacing every person who leaves, replacing that person, or one job for every two people who leave. Except it excludes the defense and national security agencies and jobs. And so that's kind of broad. So I don't see a full-blown hiring freeze occurring. And, of course, the other part of the coin that nobody's really mentioning is, there have been a lot more federal employees in the last couple of years under President Obama. But and I think Joe Davidson's column points out this morning, a lot of those are to take care of long-neglected concerns that a lot of politicians get a lot of grief from their constituents about: Social Security disability applications, Department of Veterans Affairs not processing veterans claims. That's where a lot of the buildup has occurred. And then a lot of the buildup also has occurred by insourcing, eliminating contractor jobs and bringing them in-house, so that you're not really spending more money. In fact, you're probably spending less. And the Beltway Bandit community is not real happy right now because there isn't as much work for them as there used to be. So there's this trade-off, and nobody's really looking at the whole picture.
Yeah. Well, I always thought it was interesting that the big contracting out jumpstart was during the Clinton administration.
That's right.
They eliminated 270,000 federal jobs. They refer to them as overhead, and it's just cyclical here.
Somebody has to do the work.
Yeah.
And whether it's contractors or federal employees, and my personal opinion, being someone in and around the federal employee community and representing a lot of in the interest of federal managers through the Senior Executives Association and the community that I work in, I think federal employees are more accountable. There's a public perception they're not, but I think it's easier to hold a federal employee accountable and figure out what went wrong than to hold a company accountable when they've got a contract. And the only thing you can do, the company with a contract, if they screw up, is terminate the contract. Whereas a federal employee, you can
prosecute them.
Yeah, you can sometimes prosecute them, and you can certainly fire them.
Yeah. Well, a story in the Post the other day that the government's thinking about federalizing guards in federal agencies. And at one point, they were all federal workers. And then various people outsourced them, gave them to different companies. And apparently it's not working, or at least the cycle...
Well, you wonder,
has turned.
If you know the story of the Secret Service, originally the Secret Service was a company that was protecting President
Lincoln. The Pinkertons, right.
That eventually grew into a federal agency, and now the president continues to have federal employees. The Capitol Police that provides security on the Hill are federal employees. So all of the places where people in high-level positions that can control that decision-making process, they tend to federalize that protection process and security process. And so there must be a reason for that.
Yeah. They want that kind of protection. The members of Congress in particular, they're not going to outsource those jobs. The Deficit Reduction Commission, point. It's kind of like the Base Realignment and Closure Commission, in that it was set up to make tough choices. If the majority agree, it goes to the Congress, and the House or the Senate have an up or down vote on it. In this case, one of the interesting things is the co-chairman or vice chairman is former Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming, and he referred to Social Security, which is the sixth or the third rail of American politics, as a cow with 310 million spigots, except he didn't use the word spigot. He's got the National Organization of Women on him now. But he scared a lot of people, and he probably cheered a lot of people too, but he said Social Security is out of hand. We need to do something about it, and that's probably not going to be touched, I wouldn't think. But
well, I'm not so sure.
Well,
what
would you think they would do? Would raise the retirement age, they talk about that, but they're already raising that each year.
Well, it's already been raised.
It's an automatic,
each year.
Yeah.
It's already been done, but it only, I think it stops at 67, the increases. And I think there's more room to play with the Social Security system. I've heard a number of proposals like raising the retirement age to 70, gradually raising it all the way to 70. Also taxing more dollars, the employment tax, the Social Security tax that all of us pay. I think at a certain level, 110, 120,000, I don't know exactly the number this year, once you make that much in wages, then you don't pay anymore.
You pay the Medicare portion.
You continue to pay the Medicare portion. But there's some discussion about increasing the level the income level at which Social Security taxes would be paid. And if you remember, there was a debate between Hillary Clinton and Obama, President Obama, when they were candidates, about what level to increase that to. So I would think that's probably on the table as well. But, you know, even if and I've heard some economists write to say that if they did those two things, that would actually fix Social Security. But then, of course, you've got Medicare.
Yeah.
And you've got other out-of-control benefit programs. I think the Civil Service Retirement Fund seems to be, from what I hear, seems to be pretty well funded and taken care of. But I would think that whatever cuts there were that affected Social Security, that this commission would probably come up with a similar cutback on federal employee retirement benefits. The problem with the commission is it's created by executive orders. It wasn't statutory. There was a strong effort to create a statutory commission which was spearheaded and led by Congressman Frank Wolf from Northern Virginia, who's been a very strong advocate for federal employees. And Congressman Wolf, I heard him talk about it several times, and he was very, very passionate about having a statutory commission. He still thinks there should be a statutory commission, and I know is concerned that this commission created by executive order may not be as successful or as effective. But Congressman Wolf talked about how the country is headed toward a real precipice here, because we just can't afford to keep going like we've been going. We have too many benefits, too much money going out, not enough coming in, and eventually we're going to go bankrupt as a nation. And because of the way our politics has come together, the third rail of politics being Social Security, the enormous partisan divide of the country where for example, on the public commission issue itself, it almost seemed to be partisan, because suddenly after a long time of opposing this commission, President Obama actually came out and supported it, a statutory commission, and seven Republican sponsors in the Senate who had previously supported the commission voted against it. I'm concerned that given the executive order nature, it may be less effective than it might otherwise be.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back in a minute. One more commercial break here on WFED 1500 AM.
No, that's great.
This week's half-price DC offer was Golfdom, Washington's premier golf store. Carrying the highest-end golf-inspired products and equipment, Golfdom truly allows you to live the game.
Golfdom's end-of-season clearance sale starts this weekend. Grab items up to 70% off, even golf ball dozens starting at $750.
Perfect for any level golfer, Golfdom has reduced-priced Callaway iron sets, Sun Mountain Superlight bags, discounted Nike drivers, and more. The sale starts October 1st. Come in this weekend for the best selection.
Head over to halfpricedc.com for other great half-price offers.
If you want to enjoy the best Greece has to offer, you just can't miss the St. Catherine's annual Greek Festival this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia. Come out and enjoy the best homemade Greek foods in the area, like lamb, Athenian chicken, calamari, Greek salads, and don't forget the wonderful Greek desserts like baklava. You must taste this homemade sweet this weekend in Falls Church, Virginia at St. Catherine's annual Fall Festival. Call 703-671-1515. 703-671-1515.
Questions about green IT strategies? Need one-on-one information on the smart grid, electric vehicles, or greenhouse gas reporting? Join hundreds of federal employees as they learn from the foremost sustainability experts at the first GreenGov Symposium, hosted by the White House Council on Environmental Quality and the George Washington University from October 5th through the 7th, 2010, at GW's Foggy Bottom campus. Go to gwu.edu/greengov for more information.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorabeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorabeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorabeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bill Bransford. He is the General Counsel of the Senior Executives Association. And what's the status? SEA people, they have two kinds of two pay systems, don't they? Those for agencies where the program has been approved and others where it has not been.
Well, there's really one pay system. There's a different pay cap. If your system, your HR system for SESers has been approved by OPM as making meaningful distinctions based on relative performance, then you can pay the higher pay cap, which right now is 178.7, I believe. Or if you're not approved, then you can pay the lower, up to the lower pay cap, which is 166, around 166.6, I think it is. And if you so most agencies now have certified systems. So most of them can pay up to the higher level, but most senior executives make significantly less than that. You know, that's the maximum that you can make. And the whole idea of this system, this new system that was passed by Congress in 2003, was to get rid of pay compression. And so Congress really got rid of pay compression by eliminating pay levels and just putting everybody in a big wide band that goes from about 120,000 or so up to 178. So you can have a lot of senior executives making less than GS-15s.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. We hear anecdotally that, in fact, the federal managers have said that their people – take a look at the SES and what it involves, the hours and the responsibility, and it's not worth it.
And SEA has been hearing that for several years now, and we did a survey. And this has been a long time coming because the executive schedule pay cap goes up less every year. That's the top of what SESers can make. That goes up less every year than the general schedule. So you're gradually having the general schedule, the higher paid general schedule employees getting farther and farther into the SES ranks. So it's a real problem. And we've been hearing for a long time that GS-14s and 15s aren't really interested in being in the SES and would just as soon get their within grades every year. So we did a survey and we released it about 6 months ago. And in fact, that's true, and very, very strong number of GS-14s and 15s. They see the relative lower difference in pay and the increased work hours, the increased responsibility, the challenge of dealing with political appointees, and the susceptibility to being geographically reassigned. And they say, Why should I bother? So SEA has a legislation that's about to be introduced on Capitol Hill pretty soon. I'm hoping that it can be a story on Federal News Radio here in the very near future. Senators Akaka and Voinovich, bipartisan in the Senate, and Congressman Elijah Cummings, and Sarbanes from Maryland are going to introduce it in the House in the very, very near future. Legislation to reform the SES, and one of the big things it would do is it would allow performance awards to be counted toward the high three for senior executives. It also would assure that senior executives would at least get the increase every year if they're fully successful or better, at least the increase of what the average general schedule pay raise is. Right now, the past four or five years, senior executives have gotten, even at the outstanding level, have gotten increases less than the general schedule, and it's been made up with performance awards that don't go toward the don't go toward retirement. So we're going to try to fix that and make the SES more attractive.
Well, Carol Bonacero, the president of SEA, has a great story about a husband and wife team. She knows. Husband's SES, I believe, and the wife is a GS-15, and Saturday morning they've had breakfast, and he's heading out for work, and she says to him, how does it feel to be working for $19.52 an hour, or whatever it is, but the idea of being given the hours he puts in, it's
and the difference isn't that great. And I hear, disturbingly, I hear more and more stories of senior executives who are willing to take a five or $6,000 pay cut to go back in and be at the GS-15 step 10 because of the it's not worth the hassle, and that's unfortunate. So I'm hoping that by changing, and our legislation doesn't just do money things. It also changes the transparency of the system. It increases the stature of career executives, and it requires the government to have a system for developing career executives even after they become SESers.
So continue training. Our friend Steve Bauer of the Federal Employee Education Association has been bugging you, I understand.
Right. One of the things I am most proud of is my service for Federal Employee Education and Assistance Fund. I serve as a director. FEA does nothing but good. It is a wonderful, wonderful organization. It helps federal employees in need. It helped 4,000 federal employees on the Gulf Coast in, after Hurricane Katrina, gave them $2 million in grants. They didn't have to pay them back. It does things like that all the time. It helps people that lose their houses to forest fires, but it also helps lower income federal employees who have a financial crisis because a working mother who's a lower paid federal employee has somebody miss a child support payment and they can't make the rent, and so they'll make a no interest loan. And it gives merit based scholarships to federal employees and their families every year, a significant proportion of them. So it's combined federal campaign time. It's the season, and federal employees, I hope that this is the one charity that takes care of federal employees, and you can take care of yourself. 11185. Don't forget that. And you know, like I said, I'm proudest of my service with FEA, which it just does nothing but good.
You know, a heartbreaking, heartwarming thing about what FEA has done, and this is obviously a continuing program, all of the children whose parents were killed in the Oklahoma City bombing years ago now, FEA made a promise with the help of GEICO and Blue Cross and some other corporate donors all those children, when they at college age, they would get a free ride to any school of their choice, anything they could get in. And one of the children had not been born, and his mother or father was killed at Oklahoma City. And there's still, some of these kids are still going through the process, and they've been to Oxford and Cambridge, they've been to community colleges, but whatever you can get in. And they did the same thing for the children whose parents were killed at the Pentagon, the attacks on 9/11.
There's so many things. I mean, we only have an hour show. Yeah. So many things that FEA does, and I just would encourage everybody to 11185 and contribute to combined federal campaign. It's easy to do, and FEA needs the support to keep doing it, what it's been doing.
Short break. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 AM Federal News Radio.
The Intelligence and National Security Report is brought to you by Mantech International Corporation.
Mantech has been providing IT services and solutions to the Air Force for more than 25 years, and they intend to deliver innovative and worldwide support to the upcoming NetSense 2 contract. They provide a full spectrum of net-centric services, including service-oriented architecture enterprise solutions, web service development, cybersecurity, network operations, and sustainment support. ManTech has been named one of the top 100 IT companies in the world by Business Week magazine.
Due to the high demand for ManTech's skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. Apply for openings today at ManTech.com. That's ManTech.com. ManTech, leading the convergence of national security and technology.
Today, you're tasked with protecting America's networks from cyber attack, training the next generation of cyber top guns, keeping sensitive data safe and secure, and getting to your daughter's soccer game by 6. If you're in government, your cyber to-do list is challenging. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you address pressing cyber issues and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
Cybersecurity Readiness is a three-day cybersecurity event exploring cybersecurity challenges, initiatives, and best practices for securing information and systems for the federal government. The show will be held November 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency Crystal City in Arlington, Virginia. Register today at cybersecurityreadiness.com.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Bill Bransford, a Washington attorney, who, among other things, is senior counsel.
General counsel to the Senior Executives Association, okay. And I do their legislative work as
right,
well.
Okay. And you said you are extremely proud of your work with the Federal Employee Education Assistance thing. I mean, that's got to be that's a win-win. We're going to be checking out here a little bit early. We want to listen to Tom Trabuco and what he has to say about his proposals to add new funds to the TSP, and then we'll come back and wrap up. I want to ask you about retirement backlog claims with the Office of Personnel Management.
Well, this is a growing issue. Apparently, OPM is...
We'll get to that when we have time, but okay. We'll be right back here on WFED. Stay tuned. Important stuff about the TSP.
So what this calls for is for a fund that is comprised of stocks that have been analyzed based on criteria consistent with the purposes of this paragraph, including corporate governance, environmental practices, workplace relations and benefits, product safety and impact, international relations, human rights, repressive regimes, and community relations. So it tries to cover a lot of ground. It's not, though, unlike other plans that have been proposed over the years, either to cause the Thrift Board to start a fund that either invests in a favored policy or disinvests in an unfavored or a disfavored
right.
policy. Actually, I had to deal with this during the first year of our existence back in 1987 when we were at a hearing and the chairman of the committee wanted us to divest from companies that did business in Northern Ireland
right.
because of the McBride principles,
right.
they were called at the time. And we tried to explain you can't turn at that point we only had the S&P 500 or the C fund, you can't turn around and make that the S&P 497 and go out and have firms compete on it. Firms compete to offer the S&P 500, and you can get those kinds of things inexpensively if you shop around properly. But if you're going to have a custom-made fund, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Right.
And what we would do then is lose our ability to cross-trade with other plans in the fund. So it didn't work then, and for that and a number of reasons, it still doesn't work now. This is not a new proposal that Congressman Langevin has introduced.
Third time, I believe.
That's right. Either third or fourth time, it changes a little bit. We did have our investment advisor look into it the last time we reviewed our investment choices. That's Ennis Knupp and Associates, a big firm out of Chicago, and they pointed out social screening can conflict with allowed practices under federal and state laws. For instance, some funds screen for alcohol, tobacco, gambling, firearms, but they're all legal businesses here in America.
Right.
And you end up getting in this situation where the government's plan is discouraging people from investing in businesses that are perfectly legal in the country. So you can get all wrapped around yourself.
From what I've read in a bunch of places, two big concerns. One is the cost of doing this, and you've had a number of different people said, okay, we want a REIT fund, and there are costs to doing that, and one of the big advantages that TSP has is the very low cost. It doesn't cost folks a lot of money.
That's right. That is one concern, absolutely. And one of the others is...
And that's one of those managed funds where, you know, all of a sudden you're choosing which companies, and then you're getting... It's a very different animal from how TSP was set up.
Sure. And you're picking winners and losers then as well, which is something that Congress did not want us to get into. They wanted us to offer broad-based indexes that were there only for the employees, not for the various interest groups that are having their political battles on different issues.
It was
only to give the employees an opportunity to invest in the broad markets of the United States for purposes of acquiring sufficient funds for retirement.
Well, and that's the other aspect of this that I've seen a bunch of folks talking about is that you open up your retirement plan to politics and in Washington, and if you're a Fed, I know there's a lot of concern there as well.
That's right. But I think you're right. I think you're asking for trouble if you do that. We have had, as I said, we've had this issue a long time. We've discussed it over the years with Congress, and I think we came up with a way to approach it that could work if everybody gets on board. And everybody's not on board yet, but it's the concept of the mutual fund window. You'll recall we had legislation enacted last summer, the TSP Enhancements Act, and actually a mutual fund window was approved in that legislation, despite the fact that our board tied on their vote on it. It was a 2-2 vote, and the unions on our Employee Thrift Advisory Council also have mixed opinions and want to look at this carefully before we do it. But the concept there is simply this. You don't pick a fund that would be good to add. What you put in is a window where from your plan, where each individual could take some amount in their account, put it through that window, and invest it in one or many of a whole tableau of mutual funds that are offered by an asset manager. These would be thousands of mutual funds. Each individual who wants to put money through that window would do so and would pay the complete costs him or herself of the mutual fund that's there. It requires a lot more work, a lot more thinking, a lot more analysis, but we think that over time, that would be the way to try to put something like this in place, if indeed there is a sufficient demand to even put this in place.
That was Tom Trabuca. He is Director of External Affairs for the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, and you get it straight from the horse's mouth what the board thinks about adding outside plans. And I want to thank Bill Bransford from the General Counsel for the Senior Executive Association for being here today and giving us these insights. And it's one of these things with this lame duck session coming up, people should, fasten their safety belts?
No, what people should do is they should join their organizations. They should stop being freeloaders, those people who are not paying dues to their union, their management association, because these groups are going to have a lot on their hands no matter who wins the elections, because even if the Republicans don't take the House, there's going to be a lot of issues to deal with.
They'll love it. Thank you, Bill Bransford. We'll see you all here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.
Presented by AT&T, investing in its network today to connect America's small businesses to the dreams of tomorrow. AT&T, your world delivered.
Here's Lynn Haddon, IT Systems Architect, Fairfax County Government, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by HP.
to achieve that level of interoperability, security is going to become very important to that. New standards like SAML, OAuth, those types of technologies, mm-hmm. as well as operational governance that will allow us to do that and to get the right information to the right decision makers at the right time.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Everybody's selling cybersecurity these days, and it's all about fear and drama. HP believes cybersecurity isn't about fear. It's about managing threats while achieving your objectives. Every day, HP helps clients achieve their missions with confidence. Take the fear out of cyber threats and enable your organization to thrive in an uncertain environment. Visit HP at hp.com/go/cybersecurity.